It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome, my fellow Americans and fans of old-time radio from across the world. I'm Uncle Sam, and I'll be your host this week. In honor of it being the anniversary of United States independence from Britain, I have a few programs that reflect on freedom, and even a special recording that I'll save for later. But first, here's an episode of the series You Are There, titled Philadelphia, July 4th, 1776.
This is John Daly at the State House in Philadelphia. A powerful opponent of the Declaration of Independence has emerged here on this fourth evening of July 1776. An opponent strong enough to rally the latent opposition to separation from the mother country. Mr. John Dickinson, Pennsylvania's leading delegate to the Continental Congress, has just told reporters that he intends to speak on the floor before the final vote is taken. This in a supreme effort to block this declaration, which would commit our 13 colonies to revolutionary war with England. Mr. Dickinson agreed that he is staking his political future on the outcome of the vote. He anticipates that if he fails to block passage of the Declaration of Independence, he will be ejected from the Congress.
And July 4th, 1776, the State House in Philadelphia. You are there.
John Dickinson, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson. CBS takes you back to the evening when the colonial leaders fought their showdown battle on the issue of independence from England, with the fate of a continent hanging in the balance. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there,
you are there.
You are there is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now,
July 4th, 1776, the Philadelphia State House and John Daly.
Dining during the recess, which is now officially over. We hurried from the inn to this microphone here on the floor of the Congress to bring you this news. Mr. Dickinson has not arrived yet. He should be along at any minute, but meanwhile, the news has preceded him and it's having an explosive effect on the delegates who are present. As a matter of fact, the weather isn't helping things either. It's very hot here in Philadelphia tonight, and in their heavy waistcoats, ruffles, and wigs, the delegates in the hall are perspiring profusely. Even more irritating are the horse flies from a nearby stable which come in through the open windows. These flies are nasty, so much so that Mr. Thomas Jefferson of Virginia, the author of the Declaration, has said that it is not at all unlikely that this debate will be ended not by sharp logic of the delegates, but by the even sharper bite of the horse flies. Major George Fielding Elliott has been talking to the delegates and is now ready with his analysis of the possibilities inherent in Mr. Dickinson's announcement. So I switch you now to our CBS headquarters booth here in the Congress. Come in, Major Elliott.
Mr. Dickinson's views carry great weight here. His announcement, therefore, comes as a shock to those delegates who want the Declaration of Independence passed. Mr. John Adams, from the Massachusetts Bay Colony, leader of the Independence Party, had hoped the declaration would go through unanimously, but that's no longer possible. Indeed, the declaration may not even pass. Mr. Adams and Mr. Dickinson personify the present political conflict. Mr. Adams is the son of a Massachusetts lawyer. He was educated for the law in New England. He agrees with the men who dumped the East India Company's tea into Boston Harbor. Although Mr. Adams prides himself on being a plain man, the delegates regard him as arrogant and intolerant of all who differ with his views. Mr. Dickinson, on the other hand, was born to wealth. He received his education at London's Middle Temple. He has a mild, amiable, sincere manner. He opposes independence because of his conviction that all political injustices can be righted by legal methods without recourse to violence or revolution. Just a moment. John Adams and Thomas Jefferson have entered the hall. So, back to John Daly.
Mr. Jefferson.
Yes?
Mr. Jefferson, you've heard the news that Mr. Dickinson will speak against independence. May we have your comment?
I have the greatest respect for Mr. Dickinson's courage and integrity,
Mr. Adams and I wish we could say as much for his political judgment.
This Congress, sir, is in no mood for any more of Mr. Dickinson's temporizing. In the course of this debate, the delegates have learned to know Mr. Dickinson for what he is. A spineless aristocrat at best, at worst an agent of the enemy.
Well, Mr. Adams, we're very glad to have your comment also. Are you accusing Mr. Dickinson of being in the pay of the British?
I hardly think Mr. Adams
intended
any... If
you please, Mr. Jefferson. Sir, Mr. Dickinson has consistently sabotaged the work of this body by fallacious appeals to reason and by parliamentary devices. But no more of that. The Declaration of Independence will be put to a vote as soon as President Hancock arrives and calls this meeting to order. And I am confident that the gentleman will be unable to sway the Congress from the course on which it is now well launched.
Thank you, Mr. Adams and Mr. Jefferson. The delegates are taking their seats. And as you must have gathered from Mr. Adams' remarks, the long smoldering enmity between him and Mr. Dickinson has finally flared out into the open. The debate, when he and Dickinson clash on the floor, promises to be more violent than any this Congress has heard in the 2 years since it's been in existence. Mr. Dickinson has just entered the hall, and he has to pass our microphone. He's coming this way now. Mr. Dickinson, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Dickinson. Mr. John Adams has just called you an agent of the enemy, Mr. Dickinson. Would you care to make...
Mr. Adams considers anyone who differs with him to be an agent of the enemy. But I cannot allow myself to be silenced by insults. The question is, shall our colonies declare themselves independent of the mother country? And on this question, my opponents have been utterly dishonest.
Will you explain that, Mr. Dickinson?
Certainly will. 11 times in the past 2 years, Congress pledged itself not to seek independence. In January of this year, only 6 months ago, the Congress passed a most solemn declaration to the effect that we Americans have no thought of setting up an independent nation. And now, tonight, Mr. Adams asks us to break our pledged word. Nay, he demands it.
But if the people favor independence, Mr. Dickinson, I...
Mr. Adams has confused the people. He has engineered coup d'etats in the provincial legislatures in order to pack this Congress with delegates favoring independence. He has organized gangs of hoodlums to roam the streets of the cities and towns, attacking those who oppose revolution.
But isn't it true, Mr. Dickinson, that at least 50% of the population favors independence?
Is it right for one half of the population to impose its views on the other half by terror? Can these colonies hope to achieve victory in a revolutionary war when half of the people oppose it? I predict that if the Congress passes the Declaration of Independence, the result will be civil war, useless bloodshed, and ruinous defeat.
True.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Dickinson. The delegate from Pennsylvania is walking to his seat now. Mr. John Hancock, the president of the Congress, has entered the chamber, but it will very probably be a few moments yet before he calls the Congress to order. Mr. Dickinson said that a considerable portion of the people are opposed to independence. Well, Ken Roberts is outside the State House, where a representative crowd of Philadelphians are awaiting the result of the vote. So let's find out what they think about independence. Go ahead, Ken Roberts. With me at our CBS microphone is Mrs. Agnes Hatcher, who lives on Water Street. Mrs. Hatcher, do you favor separation from England?
I hate separation. My husband was killed fighting for separation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's John Adams that should be sorry, and Mr. Jefferson. Why don't they make peace and end this killing?
But, Mrs. Hatcher, would you want peace at any price?
Will you tell me why my husband should die at Boston fighting the Bay Colony's battles? If the men of New England have a quarrel with the British, let them do the fighting and dying themselves.
But Mr. Adams and Mr. Jefferson say they want freedom for all the colonies.
I don't care about freedom. My husband is dead.
Thank you, Mrs. Hatcher. Now, here beside me is Mr. Richard Caswell, an importer in Philadelphia. I forgot to ask you, Mr. Caswell, what do you import?
The finest of English woolen, sir. The very finest.
I see. And do you favor independence?
Excuse me,
Mr. Caswell. A dispatch rider has just ridden up at the State House. His horse is lathered and covered with dust and sweat. It looks as if he's been ridden long and hard. Where are you from, soldier?
New York. General Washington's headquarters.
What's the news there? What's happening?
Plenty of excitement.
Wait a minute. What's going on? The rider has gone into the State House. Whatever the news is, our reporters inside will bring it to you as soon as it's released. I'm sorry about that interruption, Mr. Caswell.
Quite all right.
You were about to tell me whether you favored independence.
It's an illusion, sir. Independent from what? How can we be independent? We're Englishmen. My family's English. They're all in England. Or my trade, my business is with England. Look at my books, you see. This talk about separation is ridiculous. Worse than ridiculous. It's vicious. It's ruining me. Ever since this war started, no shipments. No shipments. Percentages. 76% less business than my firm did in 75.
But, Mr. Caswell, isn't it argued that if the colonies were independent, American businessmen could then trade with the entire world?
Who wants to trade with the entire world? What do we need the world for? Everything we can produce, we can sell in England. And everything that we need, we can buy from England. It's just common sense, that's all. How do you suppose the colonies have grown prosperous and strong and important? Protected trade with England. Protected trade.
Yes, but what about the heavy taxes that the mother country has imposed? What about taxation without representation?
Bad, very bad. But independence? Worse, much worse. Terrible. What about Pitt and Burke in Parliament? We have friends in England. They're trying to settle this thing intelligently, without violence, without bloodshed. But Mr. Adams and Jefferson, those wild men in there, hot-headed radicals, that's what they are. They want to get power, that's all, power. That's all they're interested in, power.
But, Mr. Caswell, independence is
independence, nothing... Independence, the worst second.
Listen to him.
We've already become independent of principle and gratitude to the mother country.
What's he saying?
And if this war is permitted to continue, we shall become independent of cash, clothing, laws, and liberty, and... Yes, life itself.
What are you talking about?
You're a liar, that's what you are, mister. You're a Tory.
I'm a Tory.
The truth. It may not be popular, but it's the truth.
Shut up, you Tory, or we'll take your lesson.
I'm not afraid of you.
Listen, close your mouth.
Caswell, just struck by some men who've been heckling him. The crowd here is manhandling Mr. Caswell. The men are flailing at him with their fists. They must be members of the Sons of Liberty. The women are tearing at Mr. Caswell's clothes and spitting at him. This crowd has gone wild and it's frightening. Mr. Caswell has been knocked to the ground. I can't see him, but I can hear his cries. The men are bending over him, swinging their fists, pounding. This is John Daly inside the Continental Congress. We have interrupted Ken Roberts because President Hancock has just called the Congress to order. He's about to read the dispatch which has just arrived from General
Gentlemen,
Washington's headquarters in New York. President
this is
Hancock.
The information contained in General Washington's dispatch. The news is grim indeed. Great British fleet is at this moment in New York Harbor. British Marines have seized Staten Island in the harbor, and redcoats are landing there by the thousands. General Washington advises that a British attack on New York City must be expected momentarily. The enemy appears to have overwhelming superiority in numbers and equipment. General Washington concludes with a statement that it may be impossible to defend New York City with the slender forces at his command. Gentlemen, the Congress will recess for 5 minutes.
The Congress has again recessed. The sound of President Hancock's gavel has released a torrent of excitement and confusion bordering virtually on panic. Delegates have risen from their seats. They are moving about the floor, talking to each other in loud voices, often shouting in their arguments. Mr. John Adams and Mr. Thomas Jefferson have rushed up to the chair. Mr. Adams is pale, agitated. Only Mr. Dickinson, of all the delegates here in the chamber, has remained seated. Mr. Rutledge! Just a moment, sir. Here's Mr. Edward Rutledge, a delegate from South Carolina. Sir, what effect do you think the news of the British arrival will have on the independence vote?
It cannot fail to have a profound effect. It will add force and logic to Mr. Dickinson's position.
Thank you, Mr. Rutledge. Mr. Rutledge is one of Mr. Dickinson's supporters. Here is Mr. Elbridge Gerry, a delegate from the Massachusetts Bay Colony and an independence man. Mr. Gerry, what do you think of the announcement, sir?
Frankly, I don't know what to think. Mr. Dickinson may well argue now that the Declaration of Independence may not be worth the paper it's written on. But we must keep our heads. We must stand
firm. Thank you, Mr. Gerry. Major Elliott has more news from New York, so let's switch to him in our CBS headquarters booth. Come in, Major Elliott.
We now know that the British fleet numbers 130 vessels. The troops on board are commanded by General Sir William Howe, one of England's ablest generals. The appearance of the fleet has thrown New York into disorderly confusion. And the legislature has withdrawn, for safety, to White Plains, 35 miles away. Our New York newsroom informs us that a short while ago, CBS correspondent Ned Kelmer passed through the British lines on Staten Island under safe conduct to interview the British commander-in-chief. He made a tape recording of this interview that our New York newsroom will play for you now.
This is the kitchen of a Staten Island farmhouse which now serves as General Howe's headquarters. A regiment of redcoats is on parade outside, marching to the music of a British military band. I can see them through an open window from where I'm standing. In their tight-fitting scarlet coats and long gaiters, these trim soldiers in perfect step to the music look like the veteran fighting men that they are. General Hauser, will you tell us how many such troops you have at your disposal?
14,000 on this island, and an additional 13,000 under General Carleton on their way across Lake Champlain in Upper New York.
You don't mind giving General Washington this information?
Not at all, not at all. Frankly, I doubt very much that it will make any difference if Washington knows it.
I take it then, General Howe, that you're completely confident of victory.
Naturally. Those men you see out there, they are the conquerors of France and Spain. They're the finest troops in the world. They'll crush Washington's colonial militiamen at the very first encounter, utterly. But Washington, poor fellow, he's leading nothing but a rabble. They lack powder, guns. His officers are without experience. Washington himself is hardly what you might call, shall we say, a professional military man.
General Washington, sir, made quite a good showing in the war against the French.
Under English commanders, Mr. Carmer.
Chalmer.
Under English commanders. Mr. Carmer?
Chalmer. General Howe, you know, of course, that the Continental Congress is about to vote on independence from England. Would you care to comment on that, sir?
Yes, yes, I would like to say something to that. I would like to say it as a friend and not as a soldier. I repeat, as a friend, because I think I have amply demonstrated my friendship for British America in the past, by word and deed.
Yes, if I recall correctly, General Howe, you once stated publicly that you would never lead British troops against British America.
Well, of course, but the situation has changed. The colonies are now being led by a pack of extremists. This rebellion by the mob must be crushed, and I have the forces with which to crush it. The greatest fleet and the most powerful force of soldiers ever assembled on American soil. I hope with all my heart that it will not be necessary to throw this array of military power into action. I pray that the council of the extremists will be rejected by the Continental Congress and at the advice of saner, more moderate men will prevail.
Thank you, General Howe.
This is George Fielding Elliott in Philadelphia. The interview you have just heard was a tape recording made by Ned Chalmer at British headquarters on Staten Island. The recess here in the Continental Congress continues. The delegates are confused, shaken. Mr. Adams, Mr. Jefferson, and Mr. Benjamin Franklin, the leaders of the Independence Party, are doing all they can to counteract the doubt and hesitation inspired by the news from New York. They are trying desperately to maintain their strength, to keep their pledged votes in line, and they are insisting that the final vote be taken tonight without regard for the situation in New York. On the other hand, a group of less militant delegates is urging postponement until we have more definite information from General Washington's headquarters. The commander-in-chief said in his dispatch that he fears that he may not be able to hold New York. The cautious delegates want to know for sure whether he will fight or surrender the city without a struggle. Our CBS correspondent, Bud Collier, is now at General Washington's headquarters. He may have some last-minute information. Therefore, we take you now to General Washington's headquarters in New York, Bud Collier reporting.
I'm waiting here on the parade ground before General Washington's headquarters. The commander-in-chief has promised to answer my question as soon as he comes out to address his troops, presumably to make some formal statement about the news of the British arrival. The bugles are blowing assembly. The men of the regiments are running to join their formations. I can see the flag of the 1st Massachusetts, I believe it is, the Virginia Rifles, the 5th Connecticut, and many others. But in all this mass of thousands of men, I see very few men in uniform. Most of the troops are dressed in civilian homespun, and quite a few of them wear the fringed leather shirts which mark them as frontiersmen. General Washington has still not come out on the parade ground. Oh, here's a militiaman coming by. Soldier! Soldier!
Let me go. I got four.
Oh, just a few questions. You've got plenty of time.
But
what's your name, son?
Tom Summers. Look, let me go, will you, mister? The sergeant will give me all...
That's all right. I'll fix it with General Washington for you. How old are you, Tom?
17.
Ever seen any action against the British?
No, not yet.
Well, you'll probably see action soon right here in New York.
Well, I ain't afraid, if that's what you mean.
How long have you been in the Army, Tom?
Two months. Look, please, mister, ask me all your questions at once.
All right, Tom, sure. How long are you in for?
Well, I'm going back home next month. That's when my 3 months are up.
Oh?
My pa enlisted me. He wanted to make himself $10.
I see.
Well, he got his $10, and I'm going home next month.
Uh-huh.
Well, there ain't nothing wrong with that, you know.
No.
Some fellas enlisted for the money and then deserted without even serving their 3 months.
Well, yes, but what about independence, Tom? How do you feel about independence?
Well, I don't know nothing about that, honest, mister. There's the general. I gotta go.
General Washington is approaching the microphone. He wears his full-dress uniform. His sword flaps against the side of his leg as he walks. General Washington, are you going to fight for New York?
It is a difficult question. Frankly, I haven't made up my mind.
If you elect to fight, General Washington, do you think you will be able to defend New York successfully?
I will do my best, and God willing, we shall be successful. In any event, I would like to say to all the people, do not yield to panic.
But General, in view of the current situation, do you think the Declaration of Independence should be passed at this time?
That must be decided by the Congress. In Philadelphia.
Thank you, General Washington. Commander-in-Chief is walking away across the field now, his shoulders slightly bent, his jaw thrust forward in the manner of a man who bears an enormous responsibility for which he is ill-prepared. This is Bud Collier in New York. I return you now to the Continental Congress in Philadelphia.
This is John Daly at the Continental Congress in Philadelphia. This is the long-awaited climax of the debate on the Declaration of Independence. The Congress has reconvened, and because Mr. Dickinson asked to speak against the Declaration, Mr. Adams has also requested the floor. By agreement, the vote will take place when the two speakers have finished. Also, by agreement, before the session began, Mr. Adams is speaking first. He's exerting his utmost efforts to keep the votes pledged to independence from bolting to Mr. Dickinson. Will he succeed? Well, we'll only know when the vote is taken. And now let's listen to Mr. Adams.
By proclaiming a declaration of independence, gentlemen, this Congress will be giving official recognition to a fact which already exists, namely, that these colonies are actually, in fact, independent of England. Yet, some great brains counsel us to wait, to exercise caution. Do these cautious gentlemen plead for a postponement of a declaration of independence so that their Tory friends may have time to hatch plots and conspiracies against us? Gentlemen, to delay is to play into the hands of the enemy, defeating the cause for which so much blood has already been shed. There must be no further delay. The people are ready. The people wait for the Congress to lead them. The hour has struck. The Congress must proceed now to a vote, an affirmative vote, on the Declaration of Independence.
Mr. Adams has left the rostrum. Mr. Dickinson is coming up to speak. Dickinson's face is pale. His fists are clenched. He's clearly marshaling all of his strength for a supreme effort of oratory. He's waiting now for the Congress to come to order. Mr. Dickinson.
Mr. President, I accuse my opponents of cynicism. They do not, they cannot believe that these colonies will be able to endure as independent states. Their true goal is not independence. They exploit indignation against the mother country to further their own personal fortune. Mr. President, my opponents make their appeal to the emotions. I make my appeal to intelligence and logic. Mr. President, British troops are on Staten Island in overwhelming force. They are about to attack New York. General Washington's task will be difficult at best, but a declaration of independence now will serve only to divide the people of New York and make the defense of that city hopeless. Pass the declaration and you will set brother against brother, father against son. The colonies will become not only the scene of warfare with a mother country, but civil war as well. And in the bloody, senseless, fratricidal struggle, there is no possibility of success. Proclaim independence this evening, gentlemen, and you gain nothing. You merely invite the whirlwind of destruction. I urge you to vote against it. I beg, I plead, I beseech you, vote against, independence.
Mr. Dickinson's plea has been received without applause. The delegates are calling the question, and there seems to be no objection. Oh, but wait a minute. Several of the delegates have risen. However, they're not going to ask for the floor. These delegates are leaving the hall. Four, five, there go three more. Others are leaving also, and I can recognize some of them as men who have been openly undecided. Apparently, they're unwilling to vote, caught on the horns of a dilemma, swayed, no doubt, both by Mr. Adams and Mr. Dickinson. This is a great, a fearful moment of decision. Some of these men are apparently not capable of facing up to it. President Hancock.
Embodying the Declaration of Independence. The vote will be by colonies, each colony voting as a unit. A majority will decide. The clerk will call the roll.
12 votes will be cast. New York has decided to abstain. Thus, 7 votes will carry the issue.
New Hampshire, Mr. Josiah Bartlett.
New Hampshire votes unanimously for independence.
Massachusetts, Mr. John Adams.
The patriots of Massachusetts vote unanimously for independence.
Rhode Island, Mr. William Ellery.
Independence.
Connecticut, Mr. Roger Sherman.
Independence, unanimous.
New Jersey, the Reverend Dr. Witherspoon.
Mr. President, in my judgment, the country is not only ripe for independence, but is in danger of becoming rotten for want of it. New Jersey votes unanimously for independence.
Pennsylvania, Mr. Benjamin Franklin.
The majority of the delegation from Pennsylvania votes for separation from England, so help us God.
Delaware, Mr. Caesar Rodney.
Delaware votes unanimously for independence.
The Declaration of Independence is passed. Delaware has cast the deciding vote. There is no reaction from the delegates, and the voting continues. It will very probably be unanimous by colonies. Many of the individual delegates are shaking their heads. However, no matter what may be said against the declaration, this document is impressive. It reads well. It begins, "When in the course of human events, change is necessary," and then continues, and I quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness."
July 4th, 1776.
Deriving their
John Dickinson loses his fight to block the Declaration of Independence, and the 13 colonies go forward to establish the United States of America.
Mighty fine, mighty fine. Now, to follow up with You Are There, here's an episode from the series Father Knows Best, titled Meaning of Freedom.
Mother, is Maxwell House really the only coffee in the world?
Well, your father says so, and your father knows best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by America's favorite coffee, Maxwell House. The coffee that's always good to the last drop. Be it ever so peaceful and ever so fair. Be the sun shining bright at your door. There's nothing so sad or so full of despair as the morning after the night before. It's breakfast time in Springfield, and in the white frame house on Maple Street, all is not well. The 4th of July was a big day for the Andersons, but not as big as it might have been. That's why, on the 5th of July, the family goes to work on the greatest fall guy the world has ever known. Poor old Father. Like this.
But you said we weren't allowed to shoot off firecrackers.
That's right.
Well, Jimmy Woody had firecrackers and he shot them off.
Kathy, I've told you a dozen times, shooting off firecrackers is against the law.
They shot them off in the park.
You eat your breakfast.
Well, didn't they?
Betty, do as your father tells you.
Can't I even talk?
Eat your breakfast, dear.
Jumping creepers. Everybody else got to shoot off firecrackers except me. I never get to do nothing.
You never get to do anything.
You said it. Everybody else.
Kathy, for the 10 millionth time, the use of firecrackers within the city limits of Springfield is illegal.
Then why did they shoot them off in the park?
Because that was a fireworks display. It's entirely different.
Mom, I can't find my other shoe.
Look under your bed, dear.
I did look. Never mind. I found it.
Bud, hurry up or you won't get any breakfast at all.
Okay, Dad.
Couldn't find his ears if they weren't fastened on.
Why are you shooting firecrackers in the park different?
Because it was part of the city's celebration, that's why.
Jimmy Woody shot off firecrackers, and I'm as much a part of the city as he is.
Kathy.
His father didn't tell him it was different.
Margaret, may I please have my coffee?
Of course, dear.
Every time somebody does something and I can't, it's different.
There you are.
Thank you.
Everybody gets a bigger allowance than I do, but it's different.
Kathy, in just about 1 minute...
I have to go to bed when it isn't even dark, but that's different, too.
Margaret, will you please tell her to be quiet?
People don't even like me around here. I'm going to join the WACS. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to show the whole bunch
Kathy,
of you.
Kathy, be quiet.
But why can everybody else...
Eat your breakfast.
Gee whiz.
I don't know what she's got to complain about. I was the only girl at the whole dance who had shoulder straps on her dress.
Now, don't you start.
Father, if you just wouldn't be so old-fashioned...
I am not old-fashioned, but I will not have my daughter traipsing around in a dress that's held up by nothing but a prayer and a city ordinance.
Jim, there's really no reason why...
Well, for the love of... Margaret, one of these days, that boy is going right through the stairs, so help me.
I don't think so, dear, but I'll speak to him again.
It's like living in the house with a bull rhinoceros.
Good morning, everybody. What's cooking?
Father is.
Betty, please.
Bud, is there any reason why you can't come down the stairs like a normal human being?
How do they do it?
They walk.
That's what I did.
You... May I have the cream and sugar, please?
Oh, here you are, dear.
Thank you.
Nobody even cares if kids have fun on the 4th of July.
Dad...
Kathy, let me explain it to you once more. The reason children are not permitted to have firecrackers is a very simple one.
They don't want us to have any fun.
They don't want you to get hurt.
Dad...
Jimmy Woody had firecrackers and he didn't get hurt.
Good.
He only got 3 little blisters.
Fine.
On each hand.
Dad.
What is it, Bud?
Do you know how old Jerry Wilson is?
87?
He's 12.
Well, he certainly had me fooled.
Would you care for some more toast, dear?
No, thank you. This will be fine.
And his father bought him a gasoline scooter.
Bud.
I'm 15, and I had to go to the picnic on a bicycle.
How would you like to wear an evening gown with shoulder straps?
I don't even like the 4th of July. I never saw such an awful day in my whole life.
Well, you all had a pretty miserable time yesterday, didn't you?
Well, gosh, Dad, if a 12-year-old kid can have a gasoline
scooter...
You
had nothing on your busy little minds but firecrackers and shoulder straps and gasoline scooters.
important things like that.
Father.
Nobody thought about the 4th of July, what it means, what it is. When I was a boy, the biggest thrill of the year was raising the American flag on Independence Day. But you were busy with more important things. Maybe that's the trouble with a lot of people in this country. They haven't the time to honor their flag or think of what it means to them as individuals, as a people.
Holy cow, Dad.
Be quiet, Bud, and listen.
Yes, ma'am.
We've all lost sight of the fact that the freedoms we take so much for granted, the right to speak our minds, the right to live as we choose, weren't always ours. Less than 200 years ago, our ancestors had to fight for them. And they didn't intend that Independence Day should be spent killing one another on the highways or blowing ourselves to bits with firecrackers. They fought, and some of them died, to give us freedom. And now we've forgotten them.
Father, we know all about Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin.
I know about George Washington.
I don't mean people like that, kitten. I mean plain, ordinary people like ourselves. The families of merchants and lawyers and hard-working farmers. Those are the people we've forgotten. The people who fashioned a whole new nation out of blood and tears and gossamer dreams. You know, 175 years ago, there was no United States of America. There was only a feeling of great unrest and resentment among the American people. In the larger cities, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, there was a sort of seething tension in the streets, in the coffee shops, everywhere. But life went on. People lived as they must always live.
But, Mama, I don't like cornmeal mush.
It's very good for you, Kathleen.
All I ever get is cornmeal mush.
We'll have no arguments, child. Eat your breakfast and be quiet.
Yes, Papa.
Father.
Betsy. This is hardly the time to interrupt your father.
But, Mother...
Later, dear, please.
I'm quite finished with my newspaper. May I have my coffee, please?
Yes, dear. I hope I roasted the beans long enough this time.
I'm sure you did, my dear. Thank you.
James...
Margaret, if you and Betsy intend to speak of that dress again, may I warn you now that you are wasting your breath.
Father, the Widow Southgate says they're the latest style, and if only you weren't so old-fashioned...
I am not old-fashioned. I pride myself on being as modern and as well-informed as these changing times allow. But I will not permit a daughter of mine to risk the vapors in a low-cut bodice.
Dear, the Widow Southgate tells me...
Mother!
Jamie, how many times have you been told not to shout from the top of the stair?
But I can't find the buckle for my other shoe.
Margaret, will you please instruct your son...
Jamie, have you looked under your bedstead?
Yes, ma'am, I've looked... Never mind, it was inside of the shoe.
I'm very concerned about that young man.
James, he's only a boy.
He's 15 years old and preparing to enter the university. How can he expect to make his way in the world if he can't keep track of his shoe buckles?
Mother, you were going to tell Father what the Widow Southgate said.
Well...
Margaret, I have told you repeatedly that we cannot do business with the Widow Southgate.
But James, I've known Amanda Southgate all my life.
She has been denied a permit under the terms of the Lord North Restraining Act. And as an attorney sworn to uphold the law, I cannot permit you to trade with her establishment.
James, you know as well as I that the law is unjust.
We have already taken steps to ask that it be changed.
As you've asked that other laws be changed? As you've pleaded for representation in the government of the colonies? As you've asked...
Margaret...
When will you stop asking? When will you demand that we be heard?
When we have exhausted every peaceful method of petition. When we know, deep in our hearts, that the last stone has been turned. Jamie! Jamie! Madam, something must be done about the manner in which your son defies the laws of gravity.
Has Parliament passed a law about that, too?
Good morning. I trust everyone is well.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brother.
Jamie?
Yes, Father?
What are you trying to establish in this constant attack on a perfectly innocent staircase? I presume that was you descending the stair. Or was it a band of horsemen pursuing a wild boar through our sitting room?
Father, I'm certainly glad you mentioned it. Do you know Jeremiah Wilson?
Did I mention Jeremiah Wilson?
No, but he's only 12, and his father bought him his own horse.
Jamie.
I'm 3 years older than he is, and do I have a horse? I have to walk to school.
Jamie.
And that's a long walk. 8 squares. And everybody else in the whole school...
Jamie!
Yes, sir?
A boy who cannot keep track of his shoe buckles cannot be entrusted with his own horse.
How can you misplace a horse?
If there were a way, you'd manage.
Betsy, no one asked for your opinion.
I didn't say anything, did I, Mama?
No, Kathleen.
I've been very good, haven't I, Mama?
Yes, Kathleen.
Do I still have to eat my cornmeal mush, Mama?
Yes, Kathleen.
Gee, Willikins.
Jamie, the front door.
Nobody's afraid that I'll misplace the front door.
I could close my eyes and find the front door in the dark.
I don't know. When I was a boy, my father never permitted this turbulence at his breakfast table. Breakfast was a quiet meal, peaceful and calm. There was none of this excitement and confusion. Everything was well ordered and contained. Everything...
Mother, it's Mistress Smith.
Elizabeth!
Oh, Margaret, Margaret, you've got to help me. We're in the most terrible trouble.
Girls, perhaps you'd best go outdoors and take your brother with you.
But I haven't finished my mush.
Go along, Kathleen.
Good day, Mr. Smith. Come along, Katie.
Don't call me Katie.
Now, Elizabeth?
Oh, I'm just beside myself. Nothing like this has ever happened in the entire history of our family.
Elizabeth, may I suggest that you calm yourself?
You. The entire affair is your fault.
My fault?
Elizabeth.
You were the one who put him up to it. You were the one who told him not to pay his taxes.
You mean Hector, I presume?
My husband. If only he hadn't listened to you.
Elizabeth, I assure you...
You gave him those articles on freedom. You explained to him that the Sugar and Molasses Act was illegal. You told him to petition the repeal of the Restraining Act. You told him
what
all...
What I told Hector was true. The advice I gave him was sound. Our petitions are valid. Our protests are impeccable. If we stand united, no one can be punished.
No? Then why is Hector in jail?
Oh, Jane. Say,
that's what I call truly good coffee. How about a second cup, darling?
Those are wonderful words to hear, especially when you hear them from the world's greatest coffee expert, your husband. Of course, lots of folks think of us as experts, too, since more families do buy our Maxwell House coffee than any other brand. But when you make coffee for your husband, why, he's the expert who say so you care about. And tomorrow, if you'll just pour him a cup of heartwarmingly good Maxwell House coffee, we're mighty sure he'll say,
best coffee I ever tasted.
In fact, we'll return your money if he doesn't say that. You see, only Maxwell House has that wonderful good to the last drop flavor. Because only Maxwell House has the recipe. It's one that demands choice, extra flavor coffees, blended and roasted just so. And since no coffee is made like Maxwell House, no other coffee tastes like Maxwell House. Tomorrow, serve our Maxwell House to your husband. If he doesn't say, best coffee ever, why, just send us the can and unused portion, and we'll gladly refund your money. Our address is right on every familiar blue tin. Yes, to please the world's greatest coffee expert, your husband. Serve him Maxwell House coffee. Always good to the last drop.
It's moments later in the white frame house on Maple Street. But the Andersons aren't conscious of time. They've been swept back to the days of the American Revolution, to the story of a family much like their own. They've moved through the streets of an early American city, through the doors of the Court of Justice. And there they sit quietly, patiently, while an 18th century Anderson prepares to defend the rights of his friend Hector Smith. Like this.
Hector, you must be truthful with me. Did you say anything more?
Jim, I take my oath. I told the man just what you told me to, that I was not going to pay taxes unless I had a voice in my own government.
And naturally, you had to say it to a man who was a representative of the king.
Elizabeth, how was I supposed to know
my that... My husband. Thousands of people in the city, and he has to argue with tax collectors.
Elizabeth, I'm sure it isn't as bad as you fancy. Is it, James?
I don't know, Margaret. In these affairs, one can never be sure.
Oh, the disgrace. That I, a Stuyvesant on my mother's side, should live to see the day that my own husband...
The court will rise.
Oh. And Margaret.
Yes, dear.
They're about to begin. Why don't you take Elizabeth to a seat?
All right, James. Come along, dear. We'll find a comfortable bed.
If only he wouldn't argue with people. If only he would listen to me.
The Crown calls Hector Smith.
Jim, maybe if I plead guilty, they'll give me a lighter fine.
You can't plead guilty, Hector. The tax is unjust, and we must prove it so.
May it please your lordship.
Are you Hector Smith?
I am James Anderson, your lordship, a solicitor engaged by Hector Smith for his defense.
Well, step forward. Don't stand there.
Yes, my lord.
Jim, why don't you ask him...
Please, Hector, not yet.
The bailiff will read the charge against the prisoner.
May it please your worship...
Silence.
Hector, please be quiet.
The bailiff will proceed.
Hector Smith, territorial colonist, is hereby charged by the Crown with failure to pay his just taxes under Section 7 of the Act governing the sale of sugar and molasses.
How do you plead?
Your worship...
May it please your lordship, this is not a proper charge, and a plea cannot therefore be entered.
Not proper? Ridiculous. I drew the charge myself.
Your lordship...
I insist that the prisoner plead. Is he guilty or not guilty?
Is he guilty or not guilty of what, my lord? Of not paying his taxes? Yes, of this he is guilty, but these taxes are levied without reason. They are an affront to the principles of justice and democracy.
Mr. Anderson, I like not your tone.
Nor I a court where the magistrate draws the charges.
Jim, they'll wind up by hanging me.
Hector, will you please stop worrying?
May I remind the solicitor that he does his client a disservice by such outbursts?
I ask your lordship's pardon. It shall not happen again.
Very well. I shall ask once more. How does the prisoner plead?
He pleads not guilty, your lordship, and a host of citizens stand firm at his side. Nowhere in the history of government...
The prisoner will rise.
If it please your lordship...
The prisoner will rise. Hector Smith.
Yes, your worship?
I find you guilty as charged.
But your lordship...
You will serve 18 months at hard labor, and your property is confiscated to the Crown.
No!
Remove the prisoner.
This is infamous, your lordship. Parliament has agreed to consider our problem.
Mr. Anderson, we have no time for such trifles.
Trifles? Since when is a man's freedom a trifle?
Our courts are cluttered with this colonial rabble. Be satisfied that I did not order him hanged.
Your lordship...
Jim, don't risk your own neck.
I have a right to speak.
I order you to be silent.
And I demand that I be heard.
Bailiff!
We have all been silent too long. We've asked only a voice in our own government. And to no avail. Now we shall speak with a voice of liberty and justice. We shall raise a cry of freedom that will echo through the hearts of all mankind.
This is treason.
This is truth. The God who gave us life gave us liberty as well. We are free men endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
The militia! Jim, it's come. It's here.
Bailiff!
At last it's here. The final word has been said. The final stone has been turned.
Bailiff!
He's gone, my lord. And gone is tyranny. Gone is oppression. Gone is the iron heel that ground justice into the dust. We are aflame, my lord. The torch of freedom is lit at last.
And just as soon will be snuffed out. They'll shoot you down as they did in Boston.
Let them shoot, my lord. We are patriots, and our blood will nourish the streets and meadows and wooded hills. Our bones will bleach in the summer sun and chill in the winter snow. But if one man survives, he will be free. From his sinews will come a new race of men. From his heart will come a new life. Through him we shall build a new nation in which our children will live without fear, in which justice and freedom will prevail. Through him will be born
a new world. America!
Happened on the 4th of July?
Well, not exactly, Kitten. That sort of thing went on for years, all over the colonies.
Well, what did happen on the 4th of July?
Oh, are you a dope? They signed the Declaration of Independence.
But I wish you wouldn't speak to Kathy that way.
But how can she be so dumb?
All right, genius. Who signed it?
What?
Who signed the Declaration of Independence?
Oh, gosh. Practically everybody.
Bud, the Declaration of Independence was signed by 56 men.
Well, that's a lot, isn't it?
Daddy!
Yes, Kathleen?
There's only one thing I don't understand. What's so wonderful about the Declaration of Independence?
He'll tell you some other time, dear.
Margaret, if you don't mind, I'd just as soon tell her now.
While he's in the groove.
While I have all three of my knot-headed children in a listening mood.
What did I do?
Not a thing. And let's keep it that way.
Jim, if you're going to tell
me... All right, honey. The Declaration of Independence was written not to point out new principles or new arguments or even to say things which had never been said before, but to put before the people of the world an announcement of the fact that the American people considered themselves from that day forward an independent nation. Do you understand that?
Oh, sure.
Dear, she didn't understand one word you said.
Of course she did.
Maybe she did, but I sure didn't.
Well, I couldn't have made it clearer. You understood me, didn't you, Bud?
Yes, sir. Well, I promised Joe I'd help him do something.
What did I say?
About what?
The Declaration of Independence.
You mean the whole thing?
Or any small portion thereof.
This is going to be good.
Well, you said that the Declaration of Independence was important because it told everybody that on the 4th of July, 56 fellas got together and... Well, anyway, it's the birthday of the United States. That's the important part.
Oh, that's what it is!
Well, you could put it that way. And you know, come to think of it, isn't it strange that no one ever gives the country a birthday present?
Jim, really?
I mean it, honey. Everybody else gets them.
Father, if you'll buy the wool, I'll knit the country a pair of argyles.
Take her up on it, Dad.
How will she know what size?
That was a joke, dear.
Another one?
I'm being very serious.
Father, you're not.
I certainly am. We have the good fortune to live in the greatest country in the entire world. A country that has given us blessings far richer than we know. Our country has given us a heritage of freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom from want, freedom from fear, freedom to worship in any church we may choose. It gathered us all sorts of Americans from the far-flung corners of the earth and made for us a home. Give me your tired, your poor, it said, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Our country has a birthday every year, celebrated on the 4th of July, and all of us, no matter how rich or how poor, can afford the only gift it wants, a pledge of undying loyalty and devotion, a vow that in the year ahead, we'll remember and observe the simple principles of democracy, a promise that, to the best of our ability, we'll live as Americans.
What is it that gives you so much pleasure in a really good cup of coffee? Why, it's flavor. Yes, ma'am, and naturally, for top value, you want the most in flavor for your money. So take home the one coffee famous above all others for flavor, our Maxwell House coffee. Start serving it to your husband, the world's greatest coffee expert. When he smiles with delight and says, "Best coffee ever," you'll know why Maxwell House is world famous for flavor. Then just count all the cups of truly satisfying coffee you get from that familiar blue Maxwell House tin with the big white cup and drop. That's what you call value, lady. At your own table, then, find out how much more flavor you get for your money with Maxwell House coffee. Always good to the last drop.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Robert Young. Tonight, Father Knows Best brings to a close its second season of broadcasts, and all of us will leave on our annual vacation. Before we go, however, the members of my radio family have asked permission to say their individual goodbyes. Being an indulgent husband and father, quite naturally, I had to agree. So here they are. June Whitley?
I hope you have a very nice summer, and be sure to come back with us in the fall, won't you? Goodbye.
Rhoda Williams?
Goodbye, goodbye. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I shall say goodbye till it be morrow and have a real keen summer, gang.
Norma Jean Nelson?
We're going up to Round Lake again, and they've got boats and docks to jump off, and
Kathy,
you can go swimming and fishing. And this year I'm going to collect things like snakes and bullfrogs.
Kathy.
And if any of you come up to the lake, my mother's a wonderful cook, and she'll be only too
happy.
Did I say something wrong?
You're supposed to say goodbye.
That's what I was doing.
Well, say it.
Gee whiz. Goodbye, everybody.
And finally, a word from Ted Donaldson.
So long.
That was the word. Just about does it, neighbors. I'm heading north to see a man about some fish, and I'll be driving carefully all the way. Oh, just one more thing before I go. If you take any trips this summer, leave early enough so you won't have to drive in a hurry, Then we'll all be around when it's time to get together again in the fall. That's the ticket. See you later.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Folks, Gainesy, the famous talking dog, always says, "Gaines meal. What about Gaines meal, Gainesy? Nourishes every inch of a dog. It sure does. Kennel and laboratory tests prove Gaines meal supplies balanced nourishment your dog needs for good health. Yet Gaines costs less to feed than any other type of dog food. So, folks, get Gaines meal. America's largest selling dog food.
Remember, Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson, with Roy Bargy and the Maxwell House Orchestra, will return to the air over these same NBC stations on Thursday, September 6th. Our broadcast time will be 1/2 hour earlier, and your local newspapers will remind you of date, time, and station. So until September 6th, this is Bill Foreman saying good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House. America's favorite brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. Father Knows Best is transcribed in Hollywood and written by Ed James. Now stay tuned in for Dragnet, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Dragnet, the story of your police force, is next on NBC.
Well, I promised you a special treat. And here it is, a recording of President John F. Kennedy reading the Declaration of Independence. Before I go, I want to wish you all a happy and safe Independence Day. Thank you for listening.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people
to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new gods for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish their right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative power, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amounts and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the work of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an indistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, They have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.